NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. The Olympics is wrapping up this weekend, and this has been a strange Olympics. Nobody in the stands, COVID spreading through the Olympic Village, protests in Tokyo.
Well, I'm in my tiny, tiny hotel room, which, you know, I can't even stretch my arms out to do yoga in the hallway. It's only a few steps away. It's very, very tiny.
Our own Mandalay Del Barco has been reporting on the Olympics for NPR from Tokyo.
It's been very interesting and strange and kind of humbling to be here as a journalist as well. There's not a lot of us here. Kind of a lonely Olympics, I should say.
Mandalay says these Olympics have also been marked by all these protests, a lot of them over the cost of this Olympic Games, which is one of the most expensive Olympics on record.
I know it costs a lot to put these Olympic Games on, and the venues were paid for by tax dollars here in Japan, largely. So I think there was a lot of feelings about that.
But here, Tokyo is in the majority. Cities that host the Olympics almost always lose money on it. So why did they do it? Today on the show, we take a look at the costs and benefits of hosting the Olympics, right after the break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Fundrise, making investing in private real estate as easy as investing in stocks, bonds, or mutual funds. Build a more diversified portfolio today at Fundrise, FUNDRISE.com/indicator. This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. Capital One Auto Navigator can help you find a car, get pre-qualified instantly, and see your real monthly payment without impacting your credit score. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Terms and conditions apply. More at CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator.
We're joined by Kenneth Shropshire, CEO of Global Sport Institute at Arizona State University, and Victor Matheson, professor of economics at College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts. So, Victor, let's start with you. How much did these summer games cost?
The Olympics in Tokyo were hugely problematic from an economic standpoint way before COVID hit. So they originally had a price tag of $7.3 billion. That's a lot of money just to start with, but those numbers had risen to $15.5 billion officially and over $25 billion unofficially by December 2019. So before a single person in Japan ever got sick from COVID, we already had an Olympic Games that we were looking at a $25 billion price tag. And there's just simply no way that the amount of money you generate from the Olympics can possibly cover those sort of costs.
Okay, Kenneth, I'm going to throw this question to you, which is, I think, the question that always comes into my head about the Olympics. Why does anyone want to host the Olympics? This is extenuating circumstances, but it seems like almost every single city that's ever hosted the Olympics has lost money. Sometimes there are, like, political issues that happen. I mean, why does anyone want to host the Olympics?
All right, and let me crown myself as devil's advocate.
I love a devil's advocate.
But it is the aura that it brings to your community. It's what it brings to your city. You are Mexico City in 1968, and you want the world to know that Latin America is a place to go to. You're Tokyo in 64, where maybe it made more sense than it does today. And you want to know 20 years after World War II, this is a city, this is a country that's part of the global community. If you're Los Angeles in 84, we're not just Hollywood, we're part of the Pacific Rim. So it's big issues like that. And for cities who are the ones that bid on this, it is like building infrastructure. It's like building roads and highways and parks and the like. But this is not a mutual fund where there's a return on investment.
And Victor, what is your take on this issue? I mean, from what I understand, it's just very rare for cities to be able to make money on the Olympics. I think one of the few was Los Angeles in 1984.
Right. So first of all, Los Angeles was just a very remarkable and unique situation. And what had happened there is that Los Angeles was left as the only bidder back in 1984 for the Games. And when you're the only bidder, Of course, you can dictate the terms of the bid to the IOC rather than the other way around. And so they said, hey, we'd love to host the games, but we're not building you new facilities. You can use the Rose Bowl. You can use the Coliseum. These are facilities that even then were already over 50 years old. And when you do that, you can really keep those costs down.
I worked at the 84 Olympics in my youth. I actually ran the sport of boxing and initially sold sponsorship and licensing. Yes, I did.
Oh my
sponsorship
gosh.
And licensing. I am Forrest Gump. So L.A. was that unique situation. Ironically, you know, there was one city that was still bidding. It was Tehran, and that was during the hostage crisis. So wisely, there was the decision, well, we won't include them in this conversation. And so L.A. had this tremendous leverage.
Is there kind of what Kenneth mentioned, is there kind of like a softer sort of payoff? I mean, is there like a payoff in, like, maybe not right away, but in like visibility for your city, long-term tourism?
Yeah, and the answer for that is yes. And that's, of course, what we call the legacy effect, right? And you can have a couple kinds of legacy here. Number one, part of this is actually real infrastructure. You make your roads better and you build your airport expansions. And both Greece and Rio have expanded subway systems thanks to the Olympics. And then there's that last thing. There's that intangible thing about, you know, becoming a major league city, right? Or putting your city on the map. But even there, it requires a very unique situation. I think the best two examples of this we have are Barcelona, which was kind of in the shadow of Madrid and lesser known as a tourist destination. It was about 10th or 12th in Europe in tourist destination before the early 1990s. After the Olympics, it's jumped into the top five in tourism in Europe. And so there's a good example. Salt Lake City also. Following the Olympics, ski visits to Utah significantly outpaced ski visits to Colorado. So there's some legacy effect that you're getting out of these things.
Are you guys going to be watching the Olympics?
I'm a big fan. Yeah. I mean, I have devolved away a little bit. I was caught up. I'm old enough where the medal count thing was a big deal. And we get more of this media presentation, the athlete backstory, than we had in the past. And you got so many options of ways to watch it. The good or bad thing now is you can almost watch every event if you want to, as opposed to just waiting and see what ABC would share with you on a given day.
Again, some of these great, powerful moments that you get from sport that, again, is worth something. But the question is whether it's worth $25 billion.
This episode of The Indicator was produced by Julia Ritchie and Jamila Huxtable. It was fact-checked by Michael Ha. Our editor is Kate Concannon, and The Indicator is a production of NPR. And the results are in. So on Friday, we had a little contest, Family Feud style, on Indicators of the Week, and we had Kenny Malone, Jacob Goldstein, Mary Childs, and Robert Smith, and me. We all competed to see who would win the prize for Indicator of the Week. The results are in. And check them out on our Twitter feed @TheIndicator or on Instagram @PlanetMoney.